This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Do this. Turn here. Don't staple, fold, spindle, tape, or mutilate. One way, etc., etc. Why not take a break from all of this? Not near a seashore or relaxing in a tropical paradise. Well, the surf's up over at kpft.org. So mouse on over to kpft.org and pledge and renew online. It's easy, uncomplicated, and will give you that warm and fuzzy feeling of having done something good for yourself and your community. So wax that mouse, hang 10, and surf over to kpft.org and renew your membership and pledge online at kpft.org. Thank you for supporting KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace. Mahalo.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And unless you've been living under a rock in Uzbekistan, by now you have heard that Anise Parker has been elected as the next mayor of Houston. Our in-house pundits will punditize on that bit of political news. In NewsWrap, the Treaty of Lisbon, strengthening anti-bias protections for lesbians and gays, came into force in the European Union, while the Vatican has issued a surprisingly strong condemnation of violence and discrimination against homosexual persons during a UN General Assembly meeting on anti-GLBT bias, and the Los Angeles Diocese of the Episcopal Church has selected the Reverend Mary Glasspool to become the denomination's only second queer bishop. At 9:40, Sally Huffer will be here to join Jack in our annual discussion of how to avoid the holiday blues. But we're not just discussing it. You can go online right now to queervoices.org, and there is a lengthy article there on the subject of holiday stress and how to avoid it. Then at 10 o'clock, the top of our second hour, Carol White joins us to discuss an organization called the Northwest Corner. It's a gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community organization which organizes a variety of social and civic events for members in Northwest Houston. Followed by Dr. Larry Ponder of the Osito Foundation, which wants every child who is impacted by HIV, AIDS, and other chronic illnesses to have a teddy bear. And at 10:40, we have our regular feature segments from This Way Out, which tonight looks at the American lesbi gay military personnel serving overseas during the holidays and how they are remembered for the clandestine communications required of them. And in the 2010 census, the federal government wants to count gay and lesbian couples, but they assure us it's not Big Brother knocking at your door. It's Queer Voices.
Well, yes, and I just want to make an announcement for next week's show that we're going to have Anise Parker here.
Mayor, that's the mayor-elect, right?
Mayor-elect.
She's gracing us.
Yes.
And
she was on CNN today.
Well, and here's...
She was on everything today.
She was on NPR. President Obama congratulated
her. Now, did he call her and leave a voicemail?
Call and left a voicemail.
Oh, my God, that's the call you don't want to miss.
Man. Well, at least it's recorded.
Yeah, there you go.
And so we have a lot of things going on today to talk about. Besides, you know, there was an election of beyond the mayor, too, so there's a number of things
couple
to talk
races,
about.
Yeah.
That were very good. They didn't do quite as well as we'd hoped with the caucus endorsement card, but we'll talk about that also. So, and next week, of course, is also our Christmas music show that's done by J.D. Doyle.
Yes, Queer Music Heritage.
We're going to be doing a year-end wrap-up with John Wright from the Dallas Voice in coming weeks. And we have a couple other things. So let's play a bit of music, and we're going to bring Ray Hill in here, and we're going to talk about this past weekend's election.
Sounds good.
So I'm sending you this Christmas card.
Okay, three guesses about who that was. That was Elton John, Step Into Christmas. This is Queer Voices.
You know, over the past couple of decades, we've had a lot of losses. We've seen people get elected to office that have been just terrible to our community, terrible to our country, and terrible to the citizens in general. And finally, the tide seems to be turning around last year with President Obama. And I certainly still have a few things I'm not happy with that's going on up there, but definitely the tides are changing. And for the past 20-some years, I've known this woman named Anise Parker, who started out as a gay activist and started out working in community, and finally, after spending 6 years on city council, the maximum, 6 years as city controller, the maximum, has on Saturday was elected a mayor. I was just very humbled that Anise showed up the last 20 minutes to stand at her precinct. Actually, we were in a foreign precinct. We were in precinct 37 because 34 was voting with 37. But she stood there with the last of the voters coming in and thanking them for coming out and vote. And it was just amazing to see that the polls closed. My sister was changing planes in Heathrow and heard the news. When I was driving home at midnight, the night of the election, and I had the BBC on radio here on our second channel here, I think on KPFT.
You have the good radio in your car.
Yes, the HD radio, and they were announcing that Anise Parker won. Today, she was on CNN, MSNBC, NPR. National, not just local. It's just amazing. And it's also amazing that this has brought Houston really into the limelight. Now, gay people couldn't have elect Anise alone. Anise didn't just go after the gay vote. Anise was a very qualified person to run for mayor. And, you know, you look at her opponent that has not been elected to office ever, that Anise worked hard, you know, no scandals, you know, and tried to make life better for us all, not just for the GLBT community. And, you know, the city's going to be in some rough times with the economy, but who better to lead this city than Anise Parker?
I vote for her. And I think I did.
I did.
I voted within a half hour of when early voting opened for her. And I'm a peg-legged guy who went in the rain to catch a train to go down to the courthouse to go in and vote.
I like the vote people who voted in the snow. Now that.
And our friend Francisco, who used to run Chapultepec, stayed out there all day
in that the snow. Yes.
He dressed up as Santa Claus holding the Anise Parker.
Was that the Santa that was?
Yes.
That was him.
It was Francisco. Francisco's a
member of the caucus.
Been a good friend of the caucus for long. Let me tell you who I am. I am Rahil, and I have proudly lost 4 races for Houston City Council, sometimes against our very dearest friends, and twice for Justice of Peace. I have lost a total of 6 races. If I had won any of those races, I would have demanded a recount because I didn't want the job. What I wanted to do is role model for GLBT people that there's no shame in losing. And that if you've got something to talk about on the campaign, it is worth putting your name on the ballot, even if you know you're going to lose, to get out there and talk about those things. I retired from electoral politics when Anise won her first race.
That's right.
Because they didn't need a Ray Hill anymore because Anise was there. Yeah. And the minute Anise got elected and swore in as an at-large city councilman, she was no longer a gay or lesbian politician. She was the representative of her citywide constituency, and she has done that job so amazingly well that the same constituency, she's never won a district race. Matter of fact, she ran in one and lost it against Vince Ryan, who had such a grudge, he supported her opponent in this mayor's race.
Well, it should also be noted that they made it rather difficult for GLBT people to run in a district race.
Sure.
So we started running with citywide.
Well, no, it made better sense because let me tell you, who holds district races? Even when we had when all our precincts were together. It was difficult to run for a district race because the people that were already had those offices were our dearest friends. So we couldn't run for office without making enemies. And people hold political grudges forever. I'm not kidding. Now the attorney general, the county attorney, Vince Ryan, and a niece, I talked to one of his assistants today, right on the top of the board is we're going to have to do something about creating a single induction point for people going to jail. So that we have a single policy on that issue involving county arrestees, constable arrestees, and city arrestees. This double system of you go to a constable holding tank somewhere until you get transferred to county jail, or you go to a city jail where you can only stay for 24 hours and you have to be moved out to a county facility. That is not efficient. It doesn't make sense to do it that way. Anise Parker has, since the very beginning of this mayor's campaign, has talked about integrating the functions of all of the police agencies within the jurisdiction of the city limits of Houston and cooperating with those within the jurisdiction of the county. It is the logical, efficient policy to have. Let me tell you about Anise Parker. And I don't want to talk about how we got here before I get off here. I don't know how much time y'all are going to give me, but Anise Parker is a policy wonk, which means she wants to do everything right. But she is also a process wonk, which means it's not good enough to do the right thing. You must do the right thing in the right way.
That's right.
Every time. Now, those of us who have worked with her closely, and I met Anise Parker when she was an undergraduate at Rice University, she called at me fussing that, quote, why don't y'all, meaning gay people, have a campus organization at Rice University like you have the University of Houston? I said, no, hon, that ain't the way that works. You organize it and we'll provide you as much support as we can. She said, well, how do you do that? And I said, what school are you at Rice? She said, well, I'm in humanities and engineering. And I said, you're an engineer and you're going to ask me how to organize? What's wrong with this picture? She was an undergraduate. She graduated from Rice University with honors. Do you know how difficult it is to graduate from Rice University with cum laude? Do you have a hint of...
Pretty hard. I went to
very
A&M.
Difficult, yes.
It's not easy to do. Yeah. And she graduated from that, and she went to work in the oil patch. As soon as she left Rice University, she was working for the Mosbacher oil interests. The Mosbachers were a bunch of politicians, but Republican politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something that a lot of people don't know.
Uh-oh.
The Mosbacher family has supported Anise's political involvement, even though her involvement has been basically within the grasp of another party every race she has run since she left that company.
Now, that is good information.
6 volumes about her character. And you know.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. She doesn't leave the room with enemies laying around. She leaves the room with friends who want to see her again.
Yeah,
and
you're
that,
right.
That yeah, has been yeah. political. She is perhaps one of the smartest living people that I know, and I've known pretty smart people. I've known Salvador Allende. I've known C. Wright Mills. I've known Edward Albee. I mean, I know some pretty bright people. I know people with Pulitzers and Nobel Prizes laying around. Anise Parker is the smartest living person that I know. And I did an interview with a Chronicle reporter.
It's already up.
This afternoon. Is it up?
Gays celebrate acceptance and Parker's win. Although the one problem with this, that Houston gay community, an estimated 60,000 people.
Oh, where?
Well, you know, that figure came from CNN.
Yes, I heard that on CNN today.
Say that came from CNN, and they asked me about it, and I said, well, you know, the old idea that gays make up 10% is probably a wives' tale. But then you have several problems. How do you define gay? How do you define transgendered? How do you define lesbian? There are a bunch of definitions for all of those terms, and they're very personal, and there's no way to universalize them. So if you want to use 60,000, knock your lights out. Did we have 60,000 votes in this election? No. We didn't reach that many votes in this election. What is the gay vote these days? Less than 40,000. Yep. 32,000 is a more realistic figure. Did 32,000 votes elect an East? You certainly won by a greater margin than that. But not every gay person, gay, lesbian, transgender person voted for an East.
Exactly.
Parker.
That's right. Or voted.
Or voted, yeah, period.
Right. Right. And let me tell you, I had a discussion. Well, one of my dearest friends is a gay guy. He's blind. He's wonderful. He voted for an East, but he monitors black radio for me.
Yes, yeah, I've been starting to do that, too.
And he monitors black radio for me, and he was listening to black radio this morning, and that may be him calling me on my cell phone, which is screaming in my pocket. We'll all ignore and hope you didn't hear that. But Edward called me this morning and said, oh, you wouldn't believe what they're saying about how racist gay people are. And I said, let me tell you something. If there had been success in driving a wedge between gay people and black people in this race, we would surely have lost. We would surely have lost. But they had a problem with that because Anise had the endorsement, official endorsement of HOPE, which was Obama's organization.
That's right.
And with that endorsement, it was hard to build that wedge, much less drive. Now, the black radio station talk show host, which are compensated for the Republican leanings, because Republicans got money to spend on that sort of thing, actively tried to stir up resistance and between black and gays. And so after I had that conversation, I got on the train. I was having a conversation with Kalki, an Asian friend of mine, on the train, and several black people got into it and said, well, you know, some racist things were said in this campaign. Yes, some racist things were said in this campaign. Not by the campaign, but around the periphery. And yes, there are racists in Houston. And I am sensitive about that. And we need to heal that. If the campaign actually advantaged from some of the racist talk, but most that I found on it were on the Chronicle blog.
Oh, that's a crazy place.
Well, that's a crazy place.
Well, now let me tell you something about the Chronicle blog.
Tell me about that.
About 20% of the most active posters on the Chronicle blogs are Houston Police Union members.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And since those are so, I don't know what the plural for nemesis is, but those are my nemesis.
Nemesis.
Those are my nemesis. And gentlemen, and I say gentlemen because you are almost all men, you've had a bad day.
Yes.
You've had a bad day. There's going to be some very serious changes in the way law enforcement is approached in Houston. In the first place, discrimination against women is over. Discrimination against gay, openly gay officers is over. There is no longer a glass ceiling in the Houston Police Department for gays who want to work in homicide and heretofore have been denied to work in homicide or any of the other investigative.
Should we start the rumor that you're going to be the next chief of police?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get that started. That'll be interesting to blog on tomorrow's Chronicle.
I think it'd be excellent choice.
No, actually, there's several positions in the city that need serious consideration, and I don't take any of this lightly. I think we need, since there are every day, over 150 people leaving prisons coming to Houston to be integrated in our society, and we have one part-time person working on that effort, and her name is Rosanna Ruiz. And Rosie does the best job she can, but she's a part-time person. And these people need to be integrated. They have housing issues. They need job issues. And if we don't give them some help in getting their legs up, then they're going to commit the same crimes they committed before, and they're going to go back to prison, and that's going to leave more victims in this city. And I think the idea of law enforcement should be to prevent victims.
Amen to that. Exactly. I don't want to be a victim again.
And then we need to rethink what we do in victims' assistance, because we need people in the victim's assistance who are not out for revenge, management are out for helping people who are victimized by crimes. We need to see to it that what is available to compensate them for their losses and what is needed to protect them from people that they now have every reason to be more afraid of, because once you're victimized, somebody knows you might be a witness, you're in greater jeopardy than you were before.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we need to concentrate on somebody who's trying to help people instead of somebody who's trying to perpetually get even. Now, all of these things make simple sense. I was on Michael Berry's show this afternoon.
Michael Berry?
Michael Berry? Remember Michael Berry? Yeah, yes, I was on Michael Berry. Yeah. And I had to start it on and say, Michael, you have me at a disadvantage. I'm on the telephone, and I'm talking to you, and you're in the room with all the buttons and switches, and you're a radio guy, and I'm a radio guy, and you're a politician, and I know I'm at your mercy. But sooner or later, we'll have a rematch where I can be in the studio and watch your engineer, and we'll do it better that time. And he said, okay, well, I won't mistreat you. And he didn't. But the point I wanted to make, and I made it to Michael Berry, and it's in the article in the Houston Chronicle today. Go down to the bottom of the article, and you'll find a quote from me that Houston did not elect a gay or a lesbian mayor. Houston elected a mayor.
Yes.
And the gay and lesbian community did everything we possibly could to make that possible in an atmosphere not driven by prejudice and hate and ignorance, so that the most qualified person could get the job they needed. And the most qualified, we were blessed this time because the candidate that is the most qualified across the board was Anise Parker. Now, we weren't really fighting Gene Locke. I've known Gene Locke since University of Houston days when his afro touched both shoulders.
Oh, my. Yeah, we saw that picture.
That picture was, yeah.
Yeah, I've known Gene that long. And I like Gene. And I saw Gene move from the force for the good to basically the evil empire of insider trading. Gene's an insider trader. And he was put forward by Bob Lanier for this race. There's no question that Gene...
Wasn't he recruited by Bob Lanier?
He was recruited by Bob Lanier, handpicked. Bob Lanier had a theory that he could build a bridge between Houston's black community and West Houston conservative Republicans. Well, hon, that was a bridge too far. Because if you catch a homophobe and scratch him, you will find a racist.
Oh, yes.
And if you find a racist and scratch him, you will find a homophobe. Those rules do not change, Bob Lanier. That has not changed. The days of insider horse trading is over. Do I dislike Gene Locke? No, I don't dislike Gene Locke. I think the world of Gene Locke. Gene Locke has made a wonderful, appointive public servant. Of course, he's gotten very rich doing that.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody that worked for Bob Lanier got very rich. If Ryan and I had gone to work for Bob Lanier for $1 a year, we might own the Rice Hotel now. The guy that owns the Rice Hotel went to work for Bob Lanier as basically a $1 a year public servant serving the Lord Mayor. Mm-hmm. Or we would own all those post properties in Midtown. Mm-hmm. Bob Lanier, strong arm, twisted the owners of the Rice Hotel to make a housing project that was funded by HUD money, mm-hmm, so that his friends could benefit from his administration. Bob Lanier was the most corrupt mayor Houston has had since the old Gray Fox himself, Oscar Holcomb. And nobody in this room and most of the people in this audience are not old enough to remember Oscar Holcomb, but I do.
I know Holcomb Street.
Yep. I know Kirby Street, too. Kirby. And I know where the mansion is.
So, Ray, would you say that the election of Anise has brought a new day to Houston?
Houston, there's several things. Politics. There's several things about Houston's new mayor that a lot of people haven't considered. This is the first mayor we've had in that office that is a member of an egalitarian and equal relationship. Now, Kathy is a professional. Kathy Hubbard is Anise's companion. And if you want to know what Kathy looks like, go to the last swearing-in pictures. All of the swearing-in pictures where Anise Parker swore into office, and that's whose hand she is holding.
She was there Saturday night, and she looked fantastic.
Well, Ms. Hubbard is a professional, but she is not so tied up in being the CPA that she is, that she doesn't have political opinions. As a matter of fact, of all of the people that I work with in Houston GLBT politics, Kathy Hubbard is the closest to my mother. Mm-hmm. Frankie, my mother,
was God,
a classic Rooseveltian liberal who survived the Depression and thought the world about ideas like Social Security and some kind of net to catch people in poverty. Frankie was wonderful. And Kathy is that person. Now, Houstonians who remember Billy Carr, Kathy comes closest to being the ideological heir to Billy Carr than any other name you would recognize.
Now, Ray, before we go, I think we should comment on the rest of the card. The caucus didn't do as well as it usually does.
Well, the caucus, we need to do a paradigm shift, not just within the caucus, but within the community. We need to understand that we have special gifts to give to the larger body politic. We have our wisdom, we have our process, we have our careful consideration. Officers of the caucus should not enjoy the liberty to pick and choose among the endorsed candidates who they support. I remember one time, Larry Bonnerice, then board chair of Houston, then Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus, now we're Gay, Lesbian, Trans, and Bisexual Political Caucus. Larry Bonnerice, one of the early members of the caucus, said that he wanted to take a leave of absence from his position on the board so that he could support a candidate for mayor opposing the candidate that the caucus supported. So we had a meeting about that, a special meeting, and the board gave Larry permission to leave the board to do that. He did that. Neither the candidate that we endorsed nor Leonel Castillo, who Larry endorsed, won the election. And after the election was over, Larry was welcomed back to the board. But ethically, if you're an officer of the caucus and you do not endorse or do not support fully an endorsed candidate of the caucus,
all of them,
you are obliged to take a leave of absence and explain why you're doing that. You can't be a traitor inside.
But you'll never know who
you will
they
be.
Vote.
Well, no, you don't know who
no,
they
it's
vote.
It's not a matter of who voting. It's who's out there supporting and working on their campaign.
Who you support. And the caucus is not about any one candidate. I don't care what they say. And when candidates who come to the caucus and say, I want my name on your endorsement card, and then they go elsewhere and campaign against somebody else on that endorsement card, they should be, if they are members of the caucus, answerable as members. I can't do anything about a city council person because I'm not city council, but I am a member and the only founder of the caucus still active in the organization.
That's right.
And I have a point of personal privilege. I'm going to call for the censorship of a candidate, a censure of a candidate. I don't know whether that vote's going to pass or fail. I know there's going to be a lot of parliamentary maneuvering, and congratulations on that. Right. I love parliamentary maneuvering. I want us to do everything we do under the rules. But I think it is a rule that if you are an officer of the caucus or a member of the board and the caucus has made an endorsement, you are obliged to support that endorsement. As for the community as a whole, we need to rethink the things that we do in respect to Pride Week. We need to decide what we're going to do with that, because as it is now constructed, I think it is getting to the end of its usefulness.
Right.
That's a whole other show.
And I think we need to come up with some mechanisms to sort of talk about that as a community, and certainly this forum as Queer Voices is open for that. Ray, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
I want to thank you all. I have so much admiration for the people around this table and in the next room. Glenn's been in there switching buttons. And I don't trust many people with my buttons, and the new volunteers that show up, I don't trust many people that switch my buttons. Only Dewey and Glenn can get away with it. Otherwise, I'm in there with my hands on the board, and I am so proud of the people around this table, because when I started doing Wildenstein in 1975.
Well, now, Ray, you know it's a pleasure to push your buttons.
Oh, that's a good...
not many can push Ray's
yes.
buttons.
Thank you, Glenn. I love you all. Oh, by the way, I may get, whenever I go to the caucus and stir up stuff, I may get some pretty good attacks. I'll see you on the Internet.
Oh, that'll be good.
And,
thank you, Ray.
I want to thank Ray Hill for joining us. You're listening to Queer Voices.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant with News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending December 12, 2009. Austria's parliament approved a bill this week to create civil unions for same-gender couples. According to the Associated Press, 110 of the lawmakers present voted for the measure and 64 voted against. It provides many of the rights given to heterosexual married couples, such as inheritance, Social Security, and pension benefits. But the new law also specifically bans same-gender couples from adopting children and denies them artificial insemination services. Lesbian and gay couples will also not be able to hold ceremonies at civil registry offices as heterosexual couples can do. And they'll only be allowed to register their relationships at municipal or magistrates' offices. The new law takes effect on January 1st. Most LGBT activists called passage of the bill a great success after two decades of lobbying. Gabriel Heinisch-Hosek, a social democrat who was the coalition government's minister for women's affairs, told the Associated Press that it was the first step in the right direction.
The Green Party in the Australian Capital Territory, sponsors of same-gender civil union legislation that included legal ceremonies, will apparently yield to pressure from the Labor government of Prime Minister Kevin Rudd to water it down. Under Australian law, the federal government has oversight over territorial laws, and it could veto the measure outright. The Australian Associated Press reported this week that the Greens have agreed to amendments negotiated with the federal government that would require gay and lesbian couples to register first and return signed papers after their ceremony before the relationship could be recognized. The amendments removed provisions that made the ceremonies legally binding. LGBT activists said the revised bill would not accomplish everything they'd hoped for, but that it would be another small step toward their ultimate goal of full equality for same-gender couples.
The progress of a marriage equality bill has been delayed in the U.S. state of New Jersey, and the clock is ticking. A vote that was expected this week in the state Senate was postponed. Its sponsors said that the bill would now be introduced first in the Assembly before the Senate would vote. They have until the end of the legislative session in January to deliver the bill to lame duck Democratic Governor John Corzine, who's promised to sign it. But he lost his bid for re-election in November to Republican Chris Christie, who favors a constitutional amendment to ban same-gender marriage and has vowed to veto such a measure. The marriage equality bill got a boost this week from New Jersey native Bruce Springsteen. Calling it a civil rights issue, the iconic performer said on his website that, "I urge those who support equal treatment for our gay and lesbian brothers and sisters to let their voices be heard now."
But a federal lawmaker in the Philippines introduced a bill this week to make attempted same-gender marriage a crime, even though it's not legal in his country. The proposed legislation by Manila Representative Bienvenido Abante Jr., a former pastor and anti-pornography campaigner, calls same-gender unions highly immoral, scandalous, and detestable. Under the bill's provisions, same-gender couples attempting to marry would face 15 years in prison and a substantial fine. Anyone who issues a marriage license to a gay or lesbian couple or who performs a marriage ceremony for such a couple would be jailed for 10 years and also be fined. Individuals who misrepresent their gender in order to get a marriage license would be punished with 12 years behind bars and a fine. Media sources did not discuss its chances for passage, but LGBT activists immediately called on lawmakers to junk the bill.
The president of Gambia, Yahya Jammeh, said this week that all gays and lesbians serving in the West African nation's armed forces should be fired. In his address to newly promoted army chiefs, he called lesbianism taboo in the military and homosexuality evil and ungodly. Jammeh once threatened to behead gays in the predominantly Muslim country. In his latest comments, he said he wants the country's military to be the best in the region. That can't be achieved, he said, without discipline and moral values. But a top government official told Gambia's Freedom newspaper website that the president has gone nuts.
The unnamed insider said that it's unfortunate that he is making such an irresponsible statement. He wants to comment on issues he doesn't have any clue about. He even threatened to fire female soldiers suspected of skin bleaching.
There were suggestions this week that the most horrific elements of the proposed new Anti-Homosexuality Act in Uganda have been dropped. The Bloomberg News Service reported that James Nsaba Buturo, the Ethics and Integrity Minister, said that the death penalty and life imprisonment for certain consensual adult homosexual acts have been removed from the draft bill, which is currently being considered by a parliamentary committee in the East African nation. He said those provisions have been deleted to gain the support of some religious leaders who had voiced concerns over the harsh punishments. He restated the government position that homosexuality is repugnant to the Ugandan culture, but said that there will be a new focus on counseling to help attract errant people to acceptable sexual orientation. Such beliefs have been widely promoted in Uganda by U.S.-based so-called ex-gay groups and change therapy proponents. As openly lesbian news commentator Rachel Maddow has relentlessly reported on her MSNBC cable show, there are close ties between Uganda's leaders and anti-gay Christian evangelical groups in the United States. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, Ethics Minister Buturo, and the lawmaker who introduced the anti-gay legislation, David Bahati, are all said to be affiliated with a U.S.-based evangelical political organization called The Family. That group offers its C Street below market rate housing for conservative Christian U.S. lawmakers in Washington, D.C., and has done considerable outreach in Uganda. Some Republican lawmakers caught up in recent extramarital sex scandals are also reportedly members of The Family. The bill in Uganda would still impose lengthy prison terms for those convicted of homosexuality. It would also jail anyone who promotes LGBT rights or fails to report suspected gay people to the authorities for prosecution.
But the European Union's Treaty of Lisbon came into force on December 1st. It incorporates the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights, the only international governmental document that bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. Article 21 states that any discrimination based on any grounds such as sex, race, color, ethnic or social origin, genetic features, language, religion or belief, political or any other opinion, membership of a national minority, property, birth, disability, age, or sexual orientation shall be prohibited. According to Martin K.I. Christensen of the European branch of the International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Intersex Association, known by the acronym ILGA, three countries opted out of the agreement: the United Kingdom, Poland, and the Czech Republic. We are particularly concerned with Poland's reasons for not signing the charter, Christensen wrote, as Polish leaders believe the charter might compromise their sovereignty in the sphere of public morality and family law. The Treaty of Lisbon gives more power to the European Parliament, increases the obligations of EU member states and institutions to act against discrimination, and makes the EU a signatory to the European Convention on Human Rights.
The proposed Anti-Homosexuality Act in Uganda was one of the subjects discussed this week at a meeting of the United Nations General Assembly panel on discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. It was held on December 10th, the 61st anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. According to a joint press release issued by Human Rights Watch, the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission, and other advocacy groups, the panel was organized by Sweden in coalition with Argentina, Brazil, Croatia, France, the Netherlands, and Norway. About 200 people at the meeting included delegates from over 50 nations. Probably most notable was a somewhat surprising statement read during the meeting on behalf of the Roman Catholic Church that strongly condemned the criminalization of homosexual conduct, which papal edicts have described as intrinsically evil. Father Philip Benet, its legal attaché to the UN mission, said the Vatican opposes all forms of violence and unjust discrimination against homosexual persons, including discriminatory penal legislation, which undermines the inherent dignity of the human person. The murder and abuse of homosexual persons are to be confronted on all levels, especially when such violence is perpetrated by the state.
And finally, the Los Angeles Diocese of the Episcopal Church, the U.S. wing of the Global Anglican Communion, has named a partner lesbian as an assistant bishop. If she's approved by a group of national church leaders, the Reverend Mary Glasspool will become the Episcopal Church's second openly queer bishop, following partnered gay Reverend V. Jean Robinson of New Hampshire. Robinson's consecration in 2003 sparked a growing rift between conservatives and other regions of the worldwide Anglican Communion and its more liberal North American affiliates. Biblical traditionalists in Africa, Latin America, and Asia firmly object to the ordination of openly gay or lesbian clergy. They also oppose the blessing of same-gender unions, a practice endorsed by some Episcopal and Canadian Anglican congregations. The 55-year-old Glasspool is currently a canon or advisor to the bishop in the Baltimore, Maryland diocese. She's been with her partner, Becky Sander, since 1988. While her selection is certain to exacerbate the schism that already exists within the Anglican Communion, she told the Associated Press this week that it's liberating for the denomination. "I've had hundreds, probably 1,000 emails from people all over the world who don't know me," she said, "but who are expressing through the fact of my election a pride in the Episcopal Church."
That's News Wrap for the week ending December 12, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Lee Moore.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it is sort of our annual, and I don't know how many years we've been doing this, Sally, but it seems like an awful long time. And one of the things we wanted to talk about during this Christmas season, and of course a lot of us have been so busy that we can't focus on it, maybe that's good, but it is the holiday season, and for a lot of us people in the GLBT community, it's not necessarily the best season, because some of us have left our friends, our family, that we grew up with, and we may be in a strange city and maybe not knowing a lot of people. Take it from there.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Sally
this
Huffer.
Is where Sally pushes. We push play and then Sally.
Yeah, Sally Huffer is with the Montrose Counseling Center. And what is your title?
Community Projects Specialist. Oh, I can't even hear myself now. I'm rather sleepy, so I'm going to try to, you know, get some energy tonight. One of the things I wanted to talk about tonight, not just about the holiday blues, which is, you know, fairly common in our community, but it's fairly common, you know, across the board. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is our senior population, because this can be a really lonely and difficult time for seniors. So I did a little bit of research before coming on, and I found out that across the country, and I'm not talking about just GLBT, there are about 35 million seniors. And of that, about 2 million could be categorized as clinically depressed, and 5 million, not clinically depressed, but experiencing the blues or feeling lonely and isolated. So that's about 20% of our population. So if we can, you know, extrapolate that 20% of the population is going through a hard time during the holidays, that's going to affect our community too. And so, and especially when we're talking about GLBT seniors, because as you mentioned, so many of them, you know, long ago, you know, left their families, their, you know, or, you know, their family is no longer living, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And so there is that isolation that they're going through.
Well, and a lot of the seniors may have lost their friends that they've had, that they've built up with, or friends have maybe moved away, or maybe in a nursing home or something.
Well, yeah, and that's, I kind of broke it down into different categories of why people may be depressed at this time, particularly seniors. So many of the times when we're talking about the holidays, it does bring back memories, memories of times past, usually happy times. We're certainly bombarded with images of what the holidays are supposed to look like. And in most cases, that's, you know, a big happy family, extended family, everybody coming together, sharing, certainly, you know, meals, food, gifts, all of those things. And we kind of know what that looks like, or at least what Courier and Ives tell us it looks like. And sometimes our families don't look like that. And so sometimes it brings back memories of what it used to be like, happier times, you know, loved ones that are no longer with us. As you said, changes in living environment. I mean, if, for example, you know, you've had to downsize because now you're on Social Security and you have a limited income and you're looking for a place to stay, you know, and you go to a residential treatment facility, are you going to be as comfortable in that place? And is it going to, you know, if this is your first year or even if this is your second, fifth, tenth year of being away, you know, recalling memories of when you were able to cook your own dinner instead of going down to, you know, the cafeteria. And, you know, what if, like, I'm from the north, I had never had cornbread stuffing before I moved here, and what if that's part of my tradition? Mm. And I come down here and, you know, wait a second, it's all cornbread stuffing.
And so, there used to be no snow down here also. That's
exactly.
That's something that sort of reminds you of the holidays.
Exactly. So we know that for a lot of people, and not just seniors, but for a lot of people, the holidays are about memories and about what we think we're supposed to be feeling and the joy and all of that. And there are so many pressures around the holiday season that sometimes it's really kind of hard to keep that in perspective.
Absolutely.
So what does a person do?
There are several things. One of the things I want to talk about is we have the SPRI program at Montrose Counseling Center.
What does SPRI stand for, Sally?
It stands for Seniors Preparing for Rainbow Years. And I don't have all of the details off the top of my head, so I'm going to ask if people have access to the internet, if they could check out spryhouston.org. Or give us a call at Montrose Counseling Center, because we know a lot of seniors don't have access to the internet. Let me give the phone number for the Counseling Center. It's 713-529-0037. We have information about what's taking place at SPRI, and we have a potluck dinner. We have a movie night. So we try to engage the seniors so that they are less isolated in social activities. But we also have some smaller groups, some social groups, peer-led groups where people can talk about the things that they're going through. And it's divided. I mean, we have a lesbian group and we have the gay men's group. And so information about when those meet, different days of the week, that sort of thing is available, like I said, either on our website or by calling Montrose Counseling Center. And one of the things that you can do is, if you know, sometimes this is pattern behavior. And you know, my mother, and I was very close to her, and you know, very strong family, she would get the blues every holiday season. And during the season, she would deny it because she was of a generation that didn't talk about mental health issues or something like that. But you had to be hyper aware around her. Am I doing something that's going to trigger, you know, this depression? And usually it was after the holidays that she would come back and say, you know, oh, well, this really hurt my feelings, or I was feeling really blue. And so sometimes we have, even if we check in on people that we care about and make sure that they're doing all right, you know, which is something that we strongly recommend, remember too that sometimes people aren't going to admit,
yeah,
you know, this is a really tough time for me. But if you know that about yourself, maybe you can take steps so that you don't find yourself being isolated and lonely. In, you know, engaging in something like SPRI, the community center is doing a potluck dinner at a church right now, and that's another opportunity. And especially as we get towards the end of the month, when people's social security checks aren't stretching as much as they usually can, and especially when we're talking about a month where there is financial pressure and people feel that pressure to send out cards or buy food or
presents,
exactly. Yeah. Another thing that is really important too is that, you know, there is a lot of drinking that goes on during this holiday season,
especially in the LGBT community.
And so people are going to parties every weekend. People are, you know, anticipating all this. And for some people, you know, it's a way of escape, but it's also a coping mechanism, mm-hmm, that's going to create depression as well.
It's a depressant. So
exactly.
It makes you worse.
So we're going to ask, you know, if that's, you know, a problem for you, we're going to ask, you know, for you to look at that. But also, if you're struggling or if you're in recovery, now might be the time to start going to some of your 12-step groups, that sort of thing. Or,
and those groups meet, I think, every day, even during the holiday season.
They do, and they have special events too, that are sober, you know, that are drug and alcohol free to help people.
And
get,
I bet a lot of them
season.
Are also smoke free these days.
Probably, yeah. A lot, yeah.
Because that used to be a real problem.
Yeah. So I remember seeing, you know, we have some 12-step meetings that meet at Montrose Counseling Center, and, you know, you could see the cigarette butts on the ground
outside. The telltale signs.
Exactly. So a lot of coffee and cigarettes. But so you know, I think that you know, we're going to ask people to be proactive in terms of recognizing, if this is what I go through, then these are some steps that I can take to try to, you know, and you know, loneliness, you can be in a partnered relationship, but let's say your partner isn't out to his or her family, and so part of your holiday might be, well, my partner always goes home, and since they don't know about me, here I am another Christmas, and wouldn't I just love to spend Christmas with my partner for once? But no, he or she has to go home and spend, you know, and do, you know, provide the cover. And so it can be really, really hard for a lot of people.
Now, what if you have a friend that you know is kind of depressed, and they say, you ask how they're doing, and they say, I'm fine, you know, they brush it off. How do you approach that? Or is there anything you can do?
Well, I mean, you certainly can't make anybody do anything. But I'll tell you what, one of the things that makes people feel much better about themselves is to do something like volunteer during this time. Mm. There are so many opportunities, either, you know, within the gay community, or, you know, even if it's helping the homeless or something like that. And if you are concerned about a senior or somebody else that you know of, why not just engage them and say, hey,
let's go volunteer
together, and we can go help make somebody else. And I guarantee you, if you can help somebody else during this time, you will feel better about yourself.
You know, because when I know people are depressed, and I, you know, how are you doing? They don't admit it. And, you know, I don't know. I can't say you're depressed.
Right.
Just, you know.
Well, and there's usually, you can get on the internet and find, you know, classic telltale signs. Sometimes it has, you know, does somebody sleep a lot? Are they, you know, have there been a change in their eating? And,
yes.
You know, I mean, there's, you know, are you, you know, sad and blue, and do you cry? And, you know, you can go online and find a list of how to, you know, figure out if you're depressed. It's not, you know, and you can kind of look around at your friends and probably guess. But again, a lot of people, we have at Montrose Counseling Center, we're always dealing with multiple stigmas, and there's always going to be a stigma about mental health, and particularly in and among the senior population. But we're also dealing with, people have the stigma of being gay, the stigma of maybe chemical dependency issues, the stigma of, you know, possibly their HIV status. So, you know,
there's even a stigma within the gay community of being single.
Exactly.
I have so many friends that are just so sad about being single, and they kill themselves over it, and they just don't know what to do.
It is really hard. So, you know, the other thing is that we do operate the gay and lesbian switchboard, and that's an opportunity. If people are feeling really sad and lonely, they can call the switchboard at 713-529-3211, and you can get some, you know, a friendly ear to talk to somebody, and they might be able to tell you about some of the other things that are going on in the community, where you can, you know, find yourself volunteering, or, you know, attending the potlucks or that kind of thing.
You know, Sally, sorry to interrupt, but, you know, Sally, what I always find funny about the holidays and family and all that kind of stuff is, I always hear people who have family complaining about family.
Yes.
People who don't have family complaining about not having family.
Grass is always greener.
Apparently.
Yes.
That's true.
Or the snow is always snowier on the other side.
There you go.
Well, even some of the bars actually used to, I don't know if they still do this, used to have like Christmas dinner, and, you know, because that was sort of family to a lot of people. And you don't necessarily have to drink to go to the bars.
Oh, exactly. You certainly don't. And I know that for many years they used to do it over at Mary's. And, of course,
no.
We don't have that anymore.
Yes.
But they, you know, they had stopped a few years back because it was the same people, as, you
yeah.
know, we all know, over and over again. So, but that's another, you know, thing, is that if you know that some of your friends are isolated at this time, why don't you invite them out to eat? Or why don't you invite them to be a guest of honor at, say, your work party? I mean, that kind of thing, if you have that kind of flexibility. I know that for a lot of people, you know, the whole work party situation can be stressful, because if you're not out at work, you know, everybody else is bringing their spouses, their loved ones,
yes.
their, you know, their fiancés.
I was asked if I was going to bring a guest, and I said no.
So,
well, let's recap here. Montrose Counseling Center offers a lot of opportunity to help people.
We do, and one of the things, like we were talking about, was the SPRI program. We are collecting gift cards for our seniors, not just for the holiday season, but to help them bridge this time of year when, you know, spending can get for some people out of hand, but also because, like I said, Social Security doesn't last that long this time of year. So what we're trying to collect, specifically gift cards, are for groceries, for places like drugstores, Walgreens, CVS, that sort of thing. Places like Target and Walmart where they can, you know, pick up a few items for themselves. Gas cards will go a long way right now for the seniors. Even any type of transportation that we can help provide for them. And also at the counseling center right now, we're doing a food drive. So we're looking for, you know, non-perishable foods, things like macaroni and cheese cups, soup, that sort of thing, so that we can also try to extend somebody's, you know, Social Security to last through the holiday season and that they won't go hungry.
I'll do it all over there.
Sally, thank you for joining us. And how can we get in contact with the Montrose Counseling Center?
Well, there's always our website, montrosecounselingcenter.org. We also talked about spryhouston.org. You can call us at 713-529-0037 or call the Gay and Lesbian Switchboard at 713-529-3211.
Sally Huffer with the Montrose Counseling Center, thank you for joining us again this year and telling us some great things about the holidays. You're listening to Queer Voices.
It was a Saturday before Christmas, December 19th. I was undecided about any plans for that eve when on the radio a voice did say, "A Jerry Christmas is near, so get on the way." The voice did explain in a timbre so clear that at Dan Electro's guitar bar, great entertainment would appear. Spoken word would start out the night and then music would play for everyone's delight. The lineup included Run Over Twice, Guy Schwartz and his Hippies, and I thought that would be nice. But not to stop there, Country Store Buffalo and the Psychedelos would play. The Blues of Sonny Boy Terry and the Sideshow Tramps would pave the way for A Dance Without a Backbone by Zoa and Friends. It was then I realized that nothing else could contend. So why the great party and what do I remit? Why a $15 cover? It's a KPFT benefit. So I sprang to my feet and out the door I flew to 1031 East 24th Street, just south of the Loop. The doors were at 7, there was no time to waste. It's a deadbeat production with some help from Spare Change. I was halfway there, driving down North Main, and then the message concluded with this happy refrain.
We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas. We wish you a Jerry Christmas and a happy Bob Weir.
90.1 KPFT Houston.
Pacifica is listener-sponsored radio.
What does that mean?
Listener sponsorship is an answer to the practical problem of getting better radio programs and keeping them.
A focus on advertisers or the mass audience accounts for the mediocrity of corporate radio.
When listeners support the radio they enjoy, their choices become better.
Listener sponsorship takes control of your radio out of the hands of companies and into the hands of the community.
But maintaining this sort of radio requires you.
Your pledge of support keeps KPFT on the air as a vital community resource.
So call our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314, to become a member today.
You can even go online at kpft.org to make your pledge.
Your pledge is essential to keep listener sponsorship viable for generations to come.
So call 713-526-4000 to support KPFT.
This is commercial-free listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio.
KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And I think it's obvious that our community has extended beyond the boundaries of Montrose. We're even outside the Loop. And there's even a whole social group.
Yes.
For people.
Out in the northwest corner.
That's kind of the hot area, I think.
Really?
And in the studio tonight, we have Carol Wyatt, who you're the founder.
Founder of the Northwest Corner, are you not?
One of five.
One of five? Well, who were the other?
Oh, boy, you're going to put me on the spot now.
Oh. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
I got it. Glenda Vila, Ollie Perry, Brian Waddle, and Kevin is just going to hate me. Kevin Hamby.
Yes. Well, you can always say Kevin, and I forgot, you know, and apologize right there.
Of course, everybody.
But you remembered. Kevin, you remembered.
So, what area are we talking about specifically?
Physically, geographically, we define our southern boundary as the northern part of Loop 610 and 290. The eastern boundary is I-45, and the northern and western boundary is the Beltway.
Okay.
So that's our targeted geography, but Jennifer was asking me before the break, are you limiting your participation to people living in inside that area?
Yeah, do you have to live right around in that?
Yes,
in that
and we have a careful audit. And
there's annexation plans.
Right. No, we were stunned to find out that people in other parts of the country, a town, would want to participate, but we've been happy to have them. And so probably about 20% of our membership comes from outside our targeted geography.
So are we talking about like Garden Oaks and Inwood Forest and kind of...
Yeah, what are the subdivisions you're talking about in this space? So if somebody's...
You named a couple of the good ones.
Yeah.
Lesbian Oaks.
It's pretty much District A, right?
Yeah. There's a large area of correlation over District A. Yeah.
So what do you do with these events?
Well,
these
we are both a social and a civic organization, as we have defined ourselves. Our initial forays have been more on the social end of things, and you'll see us do more civic things as we move into 2010. But we have a variety of large group events, happy hours and house parties. In addition to that, we have developed a bunch of special interest groups. I wish I could think of a catchier name for them, but that's really what they are. So everything from monthly dining out to games night. We have groups of parents who get together for kids' activities. Some of them have taken off better than others, but our theory is, you know what, we're going to try some stuff. And some stuff will work and some stuff won't, and we'll learn from that and we'll get better as we grow.
It's like an experimental colony of gays.
Yeah, you know, it's really... There's
well, it's not just limited to the gay community, is it not? You probably have some allies and friends, do you not?
Yeah, everybody's welcome.
Well, and some of the civic stuff, what are y'all looking at planning to do?
Well, we're in the midst of having some meetings to plan that. One event that is kind of one idea that's near and dear to my heart is to replicate an activity that we did when I was in a leadership position with Pride Houston, and we called it Pride in Action. And the idea is that you send groups of volunteers out to participate in citywide volunteering events, whether it's planting trees on Arbor Day, serving meals at Thanksgiving, wrapping packages at Christmas, whatever the case. But the idea is you go out and you work side by side with members of the straight community to help them understand that we care about our community, we're good citizens of our community, and to hopefully demystify the whole gay thing. And we've actually had some good success with that. There was a great story from when the volunteers were wrapping packages at Bel Air Methodist Church, and we had one of our volunteers had been working very companionably next to an older gentleman there, and she turned around to grab something, and the back of our shirts said, "The GLBT community cares." And he said, "I don't know what GLBT means." And she told him, and there was kind of a pregnant pause. And after a minute or two, he got this really sweet smile on his face, and he said, "You know what, y'all have been such wonderful volunteers. We're so happy that you came out to help tonight. You're welcome to come back anytime." And I would like to think that we built a bridge that night, or at least broke down a stereotype. So those are the kinds of things that I personally would like to see. But I think we'll explore the gamut. But well, I'm here tonight to talk about...
I was going to ask you, you've come here tonight, and you want to talk about... Tell us what you're here for.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was good segue.
That was a polished segue. It took hours of
She's
rehearsal.
A professional.
Thank you. We are producing an event on New Year's Eve called the New Year's Eve Gala, and everyone in the community is invited to attend. It is going to be held out at a place called the Sandtrap Grill, which is out on the Beltway across from the horse race track.
That really
is out in the hinterlands, but we've got good hotel rates right next door, so you don't have to travel. But for the very modest ticket price of $50, you get heavy hors d'oeuvres that night, cash bar, dancing, champagne, toast, and Kevin Hamby, whose name I screwed up earlier, is our designer for the event, and Kevin Hamby will be doing quite an excellent job of creating a festive atmosphere for us.
Now, is that between, was it $249 and $290? Is that generally where it is?
Yes, it's closer to $249. Okay. In fact, it's just off of
$249. So that when you're out there thinking about where this is, that'll give you an idea.
There you go.
Some
the
people don't go to the horse track. Yeah. If you don't go to the horse track, you may not know where it is.
Well, Willowbrook Mall would be kind of $249 and... I don't know, the Beltway.
In the 1960s, so that's up north. Okay.
That's probably screwing people up even worse.
Yeah, I think you just confused me, and I'm sitting here.
You know what? Check our website. We've got the information.
You have a website? What is the website?
We do. It's www.com. nwcorner.org, and you'll find information about the makeup of the organization, the kinds of events that we provide, and this event specifically. You can click on the link and buy your tickets online. We are not planning at this point to sell tickets at the door. We think we're going to sell out by just selling tickets online. And
about
we are,
how many tickets are you...
We're limited to 150 attendees, and we're about halfway there right now.
You better sign up tonight. Go to the website.
www.nwcorner.org.
nwcorner.org. Write that down so we can have it later.
Yeah. And you know how gay people are about waiting until the last minute to...
Oh, do we ever.
I think y'all
I wouldn't
do,
know at all.
God, I think y'all do that just to torment us, who the people who produce events, because it
now,
really
now
does...
Now, is that going to be on the 29th? I mean, no. Let's see, 31st of December?
That would be on the 31st. That
I'm just checking
the
my
name
account.
New Year's
New
Eve.
New Year.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Thank you very
there's
much.
There's kind of a theme there. And there's
it's a blonde thing.
There's a hotel right next door that's offering us really great rates for the night, $60 for a suite. So.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, it's a dang deal.
Now, I'm wondering, how did this organization get started? What was the impetus?
Tell us what happened. Five of you got together over a beer.
Well, the four boys contacted me and said, we have this great idea for an organization, but we've never managed an organization before. And they knew I had some prior experience in the community.
Some executive experience, I would
say. So to speak. Yeah. And, so, you know, my motto, I'm not bossy, my ideas are just better. So I stole it from Lily Tomlin, but I'm... anyway, they asked me to come in and help give them a little bit of formalized direction.
Some of you are sharing some of your experience.
Yeah, a little bit. So we, in an initial meeting, we sat down and created our mission statement and thought about how we wanted to launch things. We held an initial launch party in May at my house. We were hoping, we said, you know, if we can get 50 people together for this first event, it would be a great seating sort of thing.
Right.
We got 150 people to show up.
And it how
was
wonderful.
It was so cool. And the people who came, it was clear that they really came with the intent of meeting their neighbors, meeting new people, because everybody couldn't have been friendlier. Lots of mixing and mingling. Great mix of men and women. Great mix of couples and singles. And it just, every way you could slice and dice it, a very diverse group.
Well, you know, our community is such that you know, if you're not in the bar scene, where do you meet your fellow traveler?
Yeah.
Internet.
Well, internet, but I mean, it's still nice to be able to stand and talk to someone. And if you don't type very well, it's like having a stutter.
Yes, exactly.
Especially when you can only type with one hand, you know.
Well, two fingers.
Right.
I can only do it with two fingers.
It was a different reference here.
Yeah. I know. I was trying to ignore it.
Okay. We're bringing it back.
Yeah, let's focus on the positive.
Yes. So the Northwest is kind of the new frontier for the gays. I have tons of friends.
There's an awful lot of us out there.
Why is that? What's going on out there?
Well, you know, the home prices are reasonable and nice value for your money out there. We seem to have been fairly well accepted out there. I'm not aware of any particular problems that anybody's had in the neighborhoods.
And our people are pioneers. They see the fixer-upper and they go out and they renovate and gentrify. We take on these challenges.
Well, you know, in the category of sweeping generalizations, we do help out a neighborhood.
There you go.
That's
especially
right.
The resale values.
Well, look at the Montrose.
There you go.
Every place we go in touch. There's another neighborhood someone was telling me about that
Timber
our
Grove,
community is moving into.
Lazy Brook. All over the place.
It's getting too expensive to live in Montrose, and so we go, you know, pioneer another area.
Yeah.
They call it Renaissance areas, but it's just us moving in.
Eastwood is new. East side of Houston's coming up, too.
And, you know, we like to come back into Montrose to socialize, but not every night, not every week. And I think there just was a crying need to build some bonds of friendship out in that area. We tend to be more homeowners than renters. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with renters, but we've got some common interests there. And
flower beds.
You know, whenever we can get together to talk turf, well, it's a happy day.
Well, you know, and I think society's allowing us to be, quote unquote, air quotes, normal, and we can assimilate, and we don't have to be in the gay ghetto as much, and we can go out and have our houses in the neighborhood and
Well, now, if somebody else was out in some other part of the city and said, God, that's a great idea, maybe I could do something out here. Is there any way that y'all could maybe help out or
contact you? We'd be happy to.
You?
And I've actually extended that offer through Social Notes before, which is the website I do for the lesbian community. I didn't get a rousing response, but I'd like to extend it out again.
It was four guys that came to talk to you.
That's true. Well, maybe we can find four guys in every other part of town.
You've got an audience. So you're talking to right now.
Yeah. We're talking about a franchise, aren't we?
Okay. Yes, and all the thousands of dollars that the Fab Five have personally made off this, we've been sort of funding out of our pockets for the last 6 months. But seriously, we would be happy to share the experience that we've had in developing this over the last 6 or 8 months and lessons learned and help you get started. So if you are in another part of the town and would like to think about starting an organization, just send a note to info@nwcorner.org.
Very good. And is there an upcoming event? Oh, we got 2 minutes. We got to wrap it up here, but let's talk about next year. What do you have planned next year?
I think you're going to see an expansion of the civic events, and I don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet. We're probably going to get together and do an organization-wide planning meeting in January to see where the organization wants us to go. We've established we've got some good interests. Let's figure out how we want to mature as a group.
And if I wanted to find out about when this is, just go to the website,
mm-hmm.
and it'll have listed all the events and where they're going to be. And again, are you able to buy tickets on the website?
Yes. There's a link to brown bag tickets or brown paper tickets, whatever the website is that we're using for that. So go to the website, look on the events tab, and you'll find all the information.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anything else you want to tell our listeners today?
Just happy holidays, and thank you for the work that y'all do for our community. And I hope y'all will come out and help us ring in the new year.
And we've been talking with Carol Wyatt of the Northwest Corner Organization, and you can go to nwcorner.org and get more information. And this is Queer Voices.
Thank you very much.
Sort of a tradition here on Queer Voices, Joni Mitchell's The River, but this is done by Jeff Stryker.
On Christmas, they're cutting down trees, they're putting up the reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away. I'm gonna quit this crazy scene. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I would teach my to fly. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. You tried hard to help me, you know it put me at ease, and he loved me so naughty, made me weak in the knees. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I've gone and lost the best baby that I've ever had. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. I wish I had a river so long I could teach my feet to wish I had a river I could skate away on. Oh, I made my baby say goodbye. Oh, and they're putting up the reindeer and singing songs of joy and peace. Oh, I wish I had a river I could skate away on.
So this is one of those things where you make your own traditions. It's one of our traditions here at Queer Voices that we play The River at Christmas time, originally by Joni Mitchell. CanCon, Canadian content. How about that? This particular version by Jeff Straker. And I'd like to thank J.D. Doyle for providing all of our queer Christmas music this season. This is Queer Voices.
This is Brian Levinka.
And Jennifer Renee.
And around the community, I've seen this new organization called OCITO, the OCITO yes. Foundation. And I was a little bit interested. I did a little bit of research. And I decided that we should bring them on and tell our listeners more about the OCITO Foundation.
And OCITO is what now?
Well, let's introduce our guest.
Okay, go ahead.
In the studio tonight, we have Rod Castle, the CEO and founder of OCITO Foundation. Welcome.
Thank you, Brian and Jennifer. I'm really happy to be here on 90.1 KPFT.
Yes. This is good. We'll get you to do our promo for us. Hey, that's great.
What is OCITO?
OCITO is the Spanish word for little bear. Oso is bear. And Oscar Velasquez and I started the foundation a year and a half ago to provide teddy bears to children impacted by HIV and AIDS.
Now, are these the children of people who have HIV and AIDS, or do they have HIV and AIDS?
Great question, Jennifer. We use the word impacted because in the ASO world, AIDS Service Organization world, they use the word infected or affected. And so for marketing purposes, we went with impacted. So these children that we provide bears to are either infected, they have HIV or AIDS themselves, or someone in their immediate family has HIV or AIDS.
Where did the idea come for bears?
The bears idea came from a show that Oscar and I watched on the Animal Planet. And we were looking at getting involved with some kind of nonprofit, some type of organization to give back to the community. And we watched a program on bears on the Animal Planet. And we thought, oh, well, bears are so cute. Why don't we give teddy bears to kids?
So this started to give. Now, where do the children come from? Where do you find them? Or do you have to go to the hospitals? Or where is this? Where's the research done?
What is your reach, and what children do you reach?
Our reach, Brian, is that we go to the existing AIDS organizations or organizations in individual communities that provide care to these children. So we work with AIDS Foundation here in Houston. They do Camp Hope during the summertime, which is an absolutely incredible program that they provide. We work with like Camp Laurel out in L.A., Jerusalem House in Atlanta, Kids up in New York. So we work with a local organization that actually has a relationship with a child, and then we provide it to those organizations.
How about Casa de Esperanza here?
Casa de Esperanza is a wonderful organization here, but they are typically more with the very, very young and very, very sick children, so they don't accept any kind of stuffed animals.
I see. And so what is your, you say age?
What age group does your organization involved with?
In certain organizations, they do go down to infants. So like AIDS Foundation Houston, just this weekend we did our volunteer drive there and provided teddy bears for about 1,000 families here in Houston. So it goes from zero up to age 15. AIDS Foundation Houston works with.
Now, when exactly were y'all founded?
We started in July of 2008.
So a year and a half.
A little over a year and a half ago. And how we began the foundation is we weren't setting out to build a big national or international organization. We just wanted to help AIDS Foundation Houston get some teddy bears for their children. But when Oscar and I began, we only asked for people to donate bears. And we hosted an event at a store here in Houston called Meluware on Westheimer. That day when we hosted the event, over 400 teddy bears were collected. So we started seeing that a lot of people wanted to be involved. Within a couple months, we had raised over 1,200 teddy bears. So we had reached our goal. And many, many people kept coming to us saying, can you do more? Can you go to other places? What else can you do? And that's taken us to a year and a half later, and we've given out over 4,000 bears.
That's incredible.
Now,
congratulations.
Thank you.
When you give a bear to a child that's infected or affected by HIV/AIDS, what is the reaction?
Oh, that is, I wish I could show you pictures, I wish I could show you videos, but we need
Tell us the story.
We need to protect the privacy of these children because, unfortunately, HIV and AIDS still has a huge stigma and discrimination factor involved with it. So, unlike other children organizations, you don't see us using pictures of the children.
Right.
So, July, we went to Camp Hope. And that is where I really saw the difference that this teddy bear makes. I saw the psychosocial aspect that a teddy bear provides to a child. It provides comfort. It provides joy. It provides the sense that there's somebody out there that really cares for me. Somebody is thinking about me and loves me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And
that's beautiful.
What is the, I see you marketing to the gay community, and I know the gay people, our people are very generous and kind and compassionate. Do you market mostly to them, and do you see that most of the support comes from the gay community?
Brian, we did start within the gay community here in Houston, and the gay community of Houston has been overwhelmingly supportive of our foundation. We just finished the last 4 days doing 8 events in 4 days in people's homes, in Tut's Theaters Under the Star. We've had so much support from the community as well as the heterosexual community. We're beginning to reach out into those areas. No matter where we go, people say, you know what, it's a child. It doesn't matter, you know, what the situation is. They need help. We want to help.
If you're joining us, we're talking to Rod Castle, the CEO and founder of Osito Foundation. And, Rod, is there a website that people can go to?
Yes, Brian. We have a website. It's called ositofoundation.org.
That's easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. O-S-I-T-O.
And what will I find when I get there?
Oh, it keeps getting bigger and bigger, Jennifer. It started out as a little 5-page website. But you'll find a lot of things. You'll find out where you can donate to the foundation for as little as $10. Someone can provide a bear to a child.
Now, I need to ask this because, you know, people are hesitant to give if they're not a 501c3. Is your foundation 501c3?
Yes, we were really, really fortunate to get our 501c3 status in 13 months.
Now, is it possible? Since I don't know, I'm out here listening, and I'm wanting, you know, I want to do something. If not money, do they teddy bears? Do you take teddy bears?
Yes.
Do they have to be new taken in, or is there a facility whereby you can bring someone who's collected teddy bears can bring their collection?
Yeah, absolutely, Jennifer. We do accept teddy bears or any other kind of stuffed animal. We do prefer them to be new. Some of our organizations will not accept a used teddy bear. So we really like if someone can donate the $10 and then we can purchase a brand new teddy bear and make sure, because a lot of the children that we help have, you know, unfortunately they have AIDS, and so they're sick and they have a compromised immune system, and we don't want to give them anything that's going to make them sicker or actually, you know, harm them any more than they already are.
That's a great point. If you do have a teddy bear out there, you would prefer that they really either pick up a teddy bear somewhere and bring it and donate it, or just donate the money.
Sure.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
You mentioned earlier events. Are there any upcoming events that you would like to talk about?
Yeah, we have an event this Sunday at Guava.
Guava Lamp.
Lamp. And it's from 6 to 10.
That's right there on Wah, isn't it?
Yeah,
not?
Right there at Wah on Allen Parkway. We're bringing in Bianca Del Rio from New York. She's been a main headliner for Mardi Gras for the last 10 years. So,
female impersonator.
Yes, female impersonator. Very witty. Has a great sense of humor.
Now, this is a fundraiser for the Osito Foundation?
Correct, Brian. Yes, we're going to do a fundraiser for the Osito Foundation.
Now, is there a charge to come see this, or is it a free event?
It's a free event.
All right. All right. And what time is it on Sunday?
Starts at 6 p.m.
Okay.
And goes until?
Until?
Question.
Most important part is be there at 6 and be there to enjoy the entertainment. But remember that it is a fundraiser, so be willing to give. Should they bring a bear if they've got one?
They can bring a bear, bring $10. We also have a new act that's a female impersonator that's been performing in Houston that's been catching on, Lady Gaga.
I've seen her before.
She actually sings live, so she's going to be doing a couple numbers there. And so far, everyone that's seen her is very, very impressed. So she's performed at South Beach and at Guava.
So we got some good entertainment for a good cause this Sunday, so at 6.
Sounds like a fun time. Now, I understand there's another thing that's coming out next year.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Oh, Brian, I am super excited about this one. We are going to host the first ever Children's AIDS Day. In the last 25 plus years of the advent of HIV and AIDS into our world, there is, from everything that we can find, we have not been able to find where we've had a day where we focus strictly on the children that have had their lives impacted by HIV and AIDS.
So why children? Is it tied into your organization, and who do you try to reach with this? Is it nationally, or is it a local event? Or
actually, I hope it's an international event. We have some top doctors from Texas Children, UT, and Baylor College of Medicine speaking, the CEOs of the AIDS organizations here in Houston, attorneys speaking. So it's going to be a symposium that day talking about how HIV and AIDS are affecting children and families. Since the advent of HIV, most of the time we hear how it's affecting the homosexual community.
We do.
And what we're wanting to talk about is, yes, that pie graph is mostly male-to-male sexual contact that have HIV, but there's 25-30% of that, and it's growing, of the heterosexual community. African-American women, the minority women, are the fastest-growing population right now. And
that's very true, and all of the AIDS service organizations are focused kind of on that demographic, but there is a gap, and I think this will be a great way to address that. Now, is it an all-day symposium? Is it going to be somewhere? Has the venue been announced?
We haven't set the venue yet, but it will be, yes, an all-day symposium, and then that evening time we're going to have a gala. Talking about, it'll be more kind of entertainment, but a small gala, but we'll also be giving out awards for people who have gone far and beyond the duty in helping children and families with HIV.
Very good. So this is, you're kind of just now debuting this event. And so there'll be more news to come, I'm sure.
You guys are getting the news first here.
It's in all of our millions of listeners on the internet.
Yes.
Well, I think that's marvelous because we have the World AIDS Day and all, but... you're bringing something straightforward as to the children who are affected by HIV.
Or infected.
Are infected.
Yes.
It's something that we don't think about.
Mm-hmm.
I know we think about our friends and the adults that we know of who have been infected or affected, and we sometimes forget about the children, and great work you're doing.
Absolutely, Jennifer. I think one of the statistics, I think now every 15 seconds a child is losing a parent to HIV and AIDS around the world.
Oh, that's incredible.
Well, if you're joining us, we have been talking to Rod Castle, the CEO and founder of Osito Foundation. And for more information, you can go to the website, which is...
OsitoFoundation.org.
Yes, and you can find out information about the upcoming events and I guess eventually the Children AIDS Day that you're going to be doing next year.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about?
Thank you guys for letting us be here, and we love the work that you're doing in our community.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. This is Queer Voices.
We'll salute U.S. gay and lesbian soldiers serving overseas in a Rainbow Minute and hear about efforts to count same-gender couples in the 2010 U.S. Census later in the program. An encyclopedic chronicle of LGBT people around the world from ancient times to the present day has just come out. This Way Out Queer Life and Literature commentator Janet Mason has some of the juicy details.
It has been said that those who cannot learn from history are doomed to repeat it. But it is also true that knowing your history is essential to knowing yourself. And, as demonstrated by Queers in History, the comprehensive encyclopedia of historical gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders by Keith Stern, published in 2009 by Ben Bella Books, Inc., history is also good for the thrill of good dish. This book, one might say compendium, featuring biographies of more than 900 prominent people from 2450 BCE, before the Common Era, to today, offers plenty of role models for young people. The suicide rate is still 4 times higher among gay teens than their straight peers, 9 times higher for LGBT and questioning youth who come from rejecting families. For those of us who have been around for a while, Queers in History offers the chance to revisit the history that has happened in our own lifetime, as well as to bask in the company of our peers, including those who have been dead and gone for a century or two. In many ways, Queers in History is a starting point. The author encourages readers to do their own further reading and offers a suggestion after each entry. As the author writes in the introduction, the people in this book might have been extraordinary even if they had been entirely straight, but Queers in History documents the surprising extent to which the curves in their private lives influenced their public work. The historic queers are listed in alphabetical order, making for what initially seems like a chaotic reading experience. For example, Josephine Baker, the modern jazz dancer associated with the Harlem Renaissance and later a famous American expatriate in Paris, legend tells of Baker and Greta Garbo making love under the Eiffel Tower, is listed next to James Baker, evangelicist and convicted felon. But the end result of this type of random listing, it is indexed by profession, year of birth, and place of birth, is that the reader enters an LGBT kaleidoscope and becomes enchanted by the varying shades of lavender. There are the usual lists of suspects, from Sappho to Gertrude Stein, from Oscar Wilde to Susan B. Anthony, whose longtime woman lover called her a naughty tease, with a Z, from the Black Power revolutionary and scholar Angela Davis to homophobe and all-around bad guy, but he always got his man, J. Edgar Hoover, and from seasoned out politician Barney Frank to the relative newcomer, incisive cable news commentator Rachel Maddow. There are also a few surprises, including more than a few kings, such as Henry III, and real-life queens, such as Queen Anne, and even a pope or two, including the Italian Benedict IX, who was appointed to papal office before the age of 21, and whose idea of a heavenly time was throwing a homosexual gala. Then there is the occasional homosexual, such as Clark Gable, of whom Stern writes, "Scientists tell us that alcohol has the effect of overcoming sexual inhibitions and can turn the manliest of men into a homosexual queen for a night. Gable is known to have indulged in at least one drunken same-sex encounter with wild man actor William Haynes. Haunted by this episode, Gable had a gay director fired, saying that he couldn't work with a fairy. And while there are no other recorded homosexual accounts, Gable's masculinity was publicly questioned by two of his wives." Judy Garland is listed also, proving that she truly is a gay icon after all. Stern writes that it was well known that she was married to a gay man, director Vincente Minnelli, but Garland herself occasionally went both ways down the yellow brick road. Her several affairs with women included one with her press agent, Betty Asher. Garland, of course, had a not-so-small role in sparking the birth of a modern-day gay liberation movement with her death in the summer of 1969. The night of her funeral, a contingent of drag queens and butch dykes fought back against police conducting a routine raid on the gay bar in New York City called the Stonewall. A riot ensued and the modern gay rights movement was born. It is perhaps ironic that the author in the foreword mentions that there was a lack of role models for him when he was young. When you consider the 900 people mentioned in this book, and no doubt many more, the only conclusion that can be reached is that it is a queer world, after all. With commentary on queer life and literature, this is Janet Mason for This Way Out.
You can get a copy of this fascinating book when you support This Way Out. Log on to thiswayout.org for all the details. Coming up, the U.S. Census wants you. But first, a holiday salute to American lesbian and gay military personnel who sadly serve in silence.
Clandestine communications. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. The holidays are a time for celebration and family togetherness, but things are quite different for military personnel serving our country around the globe. All they can hope for is a phone call or email from their loved ones back home. Hearing a loved one's voice can bring a bit of holiday cheer to a combat zone, if only for a moment. But gay and lesbian service members, many in harm's way, won't even have that luxury. Under the heavy yoke of don't ask, don't tell, placing a call home to a partner on Christmas is actually a risk. An overheard word could expose their sexual orientation and get them drummed out of the military. It's happened before, hundreds of times. This holiday, some may take the risk and place that call, but it'll be in secret. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Mary Claire Whitaker.
It's that time of year again when many of you in the U.S. consider ways to maximize your annual charitable tax deductions. Unlike many other worthwhile causes, we can't survive without your help. Log on to thiswayout.org to get some unique musical, cultural, and historical programming from the This Way Out archives as our thanks for your support. No matter where you are in the world, we can't go on without you. Log on to thiswayout.org to help keep this program on the air. From the This Way Out family to you and yours, thank you and happy holidays.
The U.S. government wants to hear from its gay and lesbian couples in 2010. But don't worry, we're assured that it's not a Big Brother conspiracy. Our correspondents Dixie Treichel and John Townsend count on U.S. Census Bureau outreach specialist Matthew Weinstein to provide the facts and debunk the fictions.
Matt, you're working with GLBT Census for 2010, is that correct?
That is correct, yeah. I'm a partnership specialist for the Los Angeles region of the Census Bureau, and I'm assigned full-time to work with lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities, forming community partnerships and doing other outreach.
For people who don't know much about what the Census Bureau is, give us some history of it.
The census incorporated under Article 1 of the Constitution. We've been around since 1790, making us one of the oldest government agencies and functions. And the express purpose within the Constitution for the census is to get a complete count of the population for purposes of congressional reapportionment. And so, you know, every 10 years we hear a lot about redistricting and how many congressional districts each state is going to have. And that determination is made according to the census data. On the face of it, that's the key purpose of the decennial census, which is really a head count. Getting beyond that, census data is used for a very broad array of official purposes by the government, particularly when we're looking at disbursing federal funding to both state governments and local governments. Almost any federal grant program that disperses money according to funding formulas will use census data.
And Matt, why do we need to be included in the census?
Census data is used for literally thousands of different purposes. And on the official level, for governments, it's very important to have a complete count of the population. The department that I work in is doing outreach with every possible hard-to-reach or hard-to-count constituency. In particular, for the LGBT community, we're a community that historically hasn't had a lot of recognition in the U.S., and getting these numbers is going to be something that's very useful for all the organizations that serve the LGBT community, for governments that do offer recognition of same-sex couples in particular, because that's what we're going to be getting our data on. So by getting these numbers, it's really going to give us a much better sense of same-sex households. For example, past censuses have counted same-sex couples, and they haven't counted same-sex marriages. That's something that we're going to be doing for the first time in the 2010 census. But we've gotten so much information out of, for example, the 2000 census and subsequent American Community Surveys about the geographic distribution of same-sex couples, about the number of our families that are raising children, about the fact that same-sex couples are from every race, every ethnic group, that we're an incredibly diverse community.
Some LGBT people have been concerned about the government having private information or knowing about them, and so this is often something that a lot of GLBT people have avoided.
First of all, the decision to start counting same-sex marriages was largely in response to a lot that we were hearing from the LGBT community and from organizations like the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force that encouraged the administration to re-examine DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and how the Defense of Marriage Act impacts the census. And we determined that it doesn't restrict us at all. DOMA does not involve the census, and therefore, while for years under the previous administration, we were not releasing numbers of same-sex couples that identified that they were married. And now by releasing those numbers, this is going to be the first time that a federal agency acknowledges same-sex marriages, and that's historic. In terms of confidentiality, every single bit of personal information that goes on that form is kept safe for 72 years, and it's not shared with any other government agency. The military doesn't have access to it, the IRS doesn't have access to it, immigration doesn't have access to it, the FBI doesn't have access to it. You get the idea. It is completely confidential. It's not even subject to the Patriot Act. We do this for a very good reason, because we know that a lot of people would never fill the thing out if we couldn't guarantee complete confidentiality. And so that's something that's very important for our LGBT respondents to know.
Does the census form include, under gender, does it have an other or a transgender?
It doesn't. I'm glad that you asked this, because two things that are not currently on the questionnaire are sexual orientation and gender identity. So, you know, I've talked a lot about same-sex couples being counted, and that's because we ask about household relationships. Nowhere on the census is there a gay box. And also, it does just ask a person's sex. It doesn't ask for gender identity as a separate category. And there's no way currently to indicate that someone's gender identity is something different from their biological sex. This is an area that really, it's going to come down to the community being engaged between now and the 2020 census, between now and upcoming American Community Surveys. It's not easy for us to add questions to the census. It takes some federal public policy directive to start collecting data on a particular subject. for sexual orientation and for gender identity need to be some action by Congress or some law passed that mandated that data be collected on these topics. Now, the next census form for 2020, it'll be locked in by 2018. You know, now is the time to really start thinking about it, getting in touch with your congressional delegation, and there are national organizations that are working on it. For our part, as the Census Bureau, we do what we're directed to do, and we do it enthusiastically. When we're told to start counting numbers of LGBT people, not just by their relationship, but by their identity, that's something that we will do. The key points that people need to know about the census, just to recap, is that it's safe, the information that you put down is completely confidential, it's easy, the 2010 census is going to be short form only, so it really is only going to take a couple minutes to fill out. It's extremely important in terms of both political representation and funding. And our final point is that everyone counts. When we say that, we mean it. It's really our prime directive as a government agency. I urge everyone listening to fill out their census form when they get it in the mail, send it back in, and stand up and be counted.
U.S. Census Bureau Outreach Specialist Matthew Weinstein was interviewed by Dixie Trichel and John Townsend. For more information online, go to http://ourfamiliescount.org. We've got a special holiday gift for you next time on This Way Out.
From a classically trained balladeer to a duo featuring a transgender frontman.
The heaven dogs got the old show blues.
To a venerable gay punk rock band. Audiophile featured a wide variety of music and musicians in 2009. I'm Christopher David Trentum. J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and I feature our top 8 picks of the year on our annual half-hour Audiophile Year in Review, the week of December 21st, here on This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Lee Moore, Michelle Pleasant, Janet Mason, Judd Proctor, and Brian Burns with Mary Claire Whitaker, Rick Watts, Dixie Trichel, and John Townsend, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is only made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, listen to our podcasts, read this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WDFH, Ossining, New York, 5RRR, Woomera, South Australia, KRUX, Las Cruces, New Mexico, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
All is calm.
That was K.J. Denhert and a song called Silent Night. And, of course, I played the wrong cut right there.
What'd you do?
I made a mistake.
We still have a few minutes.
I never do that.
No, you never make a mistake. No. You are perfect.
We want to remind you that next year is different every year, of course. We don't keep repeating it. But also, in the first hour, our mayor-elect, Anise Parker, will be here. And, of course, you've probably seen her all over the press today. But, you know, she has sort of a special relationship with us because she's been on this show many times in the past. So we'll talk to her about some of the issues that she's going to be facing in the next couple of years and how she's been all over the press. It's just incredible.
Maybe she can, yeah. I Googled this morning. There were 1,400, I didn't literally count all of them, but by going through the record, 1,400 headlines
this
around
morning,
the world.
This morning she was number 4 on Yahoo. That's a global search.
That was the information I found.
Yes.
This is fantastic.
So who do we have on the show tonight?
Who did we have on the show?
Our guest, Ray Hill, was up first.
Yes, talking about the election.
And then Sally Huffer was talking about holiday blues.
And in the second hour, we had Carol Wyatt with the Northwest Corner Organization.
And then Rob Castle.
Yes, with the Osito Foundation. That's Rod Castle.
Rod Castle with the Osito Foundation, which means Little Bear.
Yes, but next week
is Anise Parker.
Anise Parker,
Mayor elect of the city of Houston. I'm just so proud.
I cry.
Yeah. Oh, what else do you say?
We say goodbye.
We say goodbye. This is Queer Voices.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston, with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, and Jack Valensky, with contributing editors Joan Devlin in Iowa and David Elliott in Washington, D.C. The music heard on this program is provided by J.D. Doyle, who also contributes to the audio file segment of This Way Out and who produces Queer Music Heritage, which is an hour-long feature of Queer Voices the fourth Monday of every month. For more information, visit JD's website at queermusicheritage.com. And listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
There are places you go to get the quick news.
You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip. The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than just the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touches our lives.
You want music from more than 5 corporations.
You need a choice. And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more.
People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored,
commercial-free,
Pacifica Radio,
KPFT, Houston.
Picture yourself driving home listening to a great story or a song or a discussion.
Suddenly, you find yourself parked, but rather than turn the radio off, you stay in your car to hear what you're listening to the end.
That's called a driveway moment.
A driveway moment?
Yes, it's that moment that you just can't get out of the car because what you're hearing is just that good.
Then hey, what better place to support KPFT?
KPFT features music, news, and talk that is so compelling people will do anything to hear the end of it. If you're in your car right now and have your cell phone with you, as soon as you pull in, give a call to our membership department at 713-526-4000, extension 314.
Give me that number again.
713-526-4000, extension 314. Speak to our membership department.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.